My name is Phil Blatzis. I'm actually here because I'm on the board of directors of the Small Business, Small Industry Association of New Hampshire, and I'm also here for myself. I'm coming up from Goffstown, New Hampshire. We don't have any hearings down south. Councillor Burton, when you look at the ballots next time around and you see that one vote in Hillsborough County, it's me. I want to start, and I am going to talk a lot about the rules. I didn't last time. I'm going to start by saying, look, this is not a loophole. And with all due respect, I have the greatest respect for the Department of Revenue, having worked there for over 30 years. I really do have the greatest respect for them. I understand the position they've been put in here. They're doing the best to administer a law that at best would be difficult and maybe impossible. So let's give them the due credit for that. I would also ask, and I understand you just said it and I just heard it, that you're gonna revise these rules, that you have hearings with the revised rules, because there is nothing to say that the revised rules won't be equally bad in another direction, because you need to get further input into it to figure out where you are now. I mean, we're missing a step in this process. There's no way to unbreak the egg, all right? But there is a way to make sure these are right. Now, I'd like to start out by saying, I don't believe in any way, shape, or form this is a loophole. I think that's a specious argument. I don't think it should be made ever. I think it's a change in the tax law. That's okay. I don't have a problem with changing tax laws, obviously. I don't have a problem with changing tax laws. I do have a problem if you're characterizing them as one thing or not another. Then the interest and dividends tax, that's really, this is only impacting the interest and dividends tax. It has nothing to do with the other taxes, by the way, for anybody who's had a question about that. The interest and dividends tax has been placed since 1923 on passive investments. You know, people who took the money and put it in corporations or put it in the bank. There is an affidavit filed in the court when we were sued about the interest and dividends tax. I know I was at the Department of Revenue at the time. I was on the team that was testifying in defense of and I testified in defense of that statute and worked in defense of that statute. It was on passive investments. These are active investments, and this makes a huge difference. There's an affidavit filed by the state clearly delineating the passive investment nature. As a matter of fact, the guy who wrote it just sent me a copy of it. I'm not gonna read it to you. I don't wanna bore you that much, but in essence, the state has firmly taken this position. Hang on, I gotta catch up with my notes here so I don't forget something. Okay, so this is a passive thing. Now, how many people know how many LLCs there are in the state? You don't really know, do you? Oh, that actually registered as LLCs. Now, how many of those filed tax returns?
Commissioner said about 22,000.
Did you? He doesn't know. In my 30 years at the Department of Revenue, and I doubt anybody's gotten any better at it, he doesn't know. He can't know. LLCs are a fiction of a creation of the state. They weren't created to file tax returns. An LLC files a corporate return, 1120, a partnership return, or a proprietorship return if they want to be a disregarded entity. We'll talk about that in a minute. All right, so in other words, there is no special tax form for an LLC. So in other words, the IND created back then, looking at the dividends coming from these, along comes LLCs, all right, and what's the difference? They don't file any different form. There is no distinguishing tax. The IRS doesn't recognize an LLC. So, and our statutes are based upon the filing on the IRS. You file 1120 with the IRS, you file an NH 1120 with the state of New Hampshire. So, he doesn't know, because there's no way to distinguish a corporation that's an LLC and a corporation that isn't an LLC, a proprietorship that's an LLC versus a proprietorship that isn't an LLC. There's probably a really technical way to do it, but I doubt anybody has ever tried, and I won't go into that. So in other words, what I'm saying is, this is a fundamental shift in the law. It's a fundamental shift in the interest and dividends tax law. And there's some problems in any fundamental shift. All right, another thing I want to bring out right now before I go on to some other things is capital gains. Capital gains tax was clearly rejected for the second time that I know of, and probably maybe others, and some of the representatives here could probably tell you that, was clearly rejected by the last legislature that was just in session. Is that correct? Didn't they have a capital gains tax? Yeah. Governor Shaheen put in a capital gains tax. I'm not telling you whether I was ever for it or against it. I worked for the Department of Revenue. I was neutral. However, it did go up for vote twice, and it was rejected. When you look at this, capital gains would get taxed to an LLC. It's included in the calculation of earnings and profits, correct? John? Correct? Capital gains would be included in the calculation of earnings and profits, or would you exempt it? Because if you're going to exempt it, put it, make it clear in the rules. Would you exempt it? It's included. Okay, there we go. So in other words, at midnight, when this was passed, it actually passed a law that you'd already forget it. That's probably a little too much to take in. Anyway, but that was not the point I wanted to make here. It's that capital gains is included in this. That's a fundamental change in the interest and dividends tax. It avoided, as a matter of fact, it even avoided it to the extent it avoids it in the case of mutual funds. And by the way, the letter that they wrote about this before the fact, which is one of the few legislative records we have, maybe the only legislative record we have, actually said we weren't going to tax capital gains, but now we are. Oh, but that's not an issue. And I don't blame them. That's the way it comes out in the wash. That is the way it comes out in the calculation of earnings and profits. There's no way to change it. Somebody up here was talking about compensation. All right, let me throw one at you at this. Earnings and profits are determined for a long time in history, and we talked about this in the first one here with the department. And look, no criticism. I actually like these people, regardless of what anybody thinks, what I'm saying right now. I like these people. I think they're doing a magnificent job in an impossible situation. When you go back to look at your earnings and profits, oh, by the way, let's just start with compensation and earnings and profits. You're right, you have to take the compensation out to determine earnings and profits. How much did you earn, sir, 12 years ago? Can't remember, can you?
I think I was in high school.
Yeah. Young fellas, I don't even like that. Anyway, you don't know how much you earned then. And by the way, you're only required to keep your tax records for 3 years. And the department only keeps them for four, or five, or whatever. Three?
Six years.
So if you've got to go back 12 years, nobody knows. So what are you going to use? The best recollection. This will be a brand new tax principle. Best recollection. I recollect I made $10 million. The best recollection will be all you have available to you. As a matter of fact, a lot of the components of earnings and profits will be undeterminable. So I'm not sure how you even go about administering it when you don't have records to support what you say. And by the way, you weren't asked to. So we're picking up along a road that I'm not sure you can actually do. That's just compensation. There's all kinds of other components to earnings and profits and what you distributed and what you didn't distribute, da-da-da-da. I don't think you can actually figure it out. So I'm not sure how you set it up, but I think you have to put some mechanism to deal with unknowns. And how do you make that? Whose decision will that be, yours or theirs? And I say that not to be facetious, but to say that best recollection with no records makes it unadministratable. Makes it so that you actually can't administer the law. Nobody can comply with it in truth. I mean, everybody can make it up, but we can make up tax returns anyway. I don't want to. I think that's a bad idea. I just think it's time for people to think about this in terms of things like this. It may not be that we can administer this. Okay, the next point is, all right, in keeping with the rules here, is, hang on, I've got to catch up again. Oh. You have to write a fiscal impact statement for this, right? And those are usually, for the rule-making process, kind of take a nod, right? Okay, we have to write they have to write, not me anymore, thank you very much. You've got to write, your problem. You have to write a fiscal note for this, all right? Well, there's no original fiscal note to begin on. You don't write a fiscal note based upon something that comes up at midnight and doesn't have a chance to go through the process. There is no fiscal note. When you write this fiscal note, I would encourage you to consider the economic impact. In other words, you're taking 5% out of a possible investment stream. Now, that 5% can actually be calculated depending upon how you feel that investment stream will go, but you could come up with a range of values. And I was looking at this recently and thinking, you know, it's in the neighborhood of 600 jobs. This is just the direct impact per year, by the way. So I think you ought to look at that and see if you can come up with the economic impact of this job. And are people willing to tolerate those $800 jobs? Now just step back for a second. 95% of all businesses in the state of New Hampshire for employment security, you know, the statistics they put on the web, 95% of those businesses have 50 or less employees. Getting around to my small business, small industry stuff here. 50 or less employees, they employ 42% of the people. Think about that. That small business, that's exactly who this is going to hurt. All right, 42%. Now you start throwing out the big guys that don't pay any taxes or really aren't involved, like the state of New Hampshire and the towns and Dartmouth and Dartmouth Hitchcock Hospital. They're all listed in the state's annual report if you want to look. Well, the top 10 are listed there. And you can actually see who isn't paying taxes. So what we're saying is, I'm saying a private industry, all right, not 45%, but 50% of the jobs are now coming out of small business, all right? And you're taking,
I'm running out of time.
Anybody give me a couple of their minutes they didn't use?
I yield back the balance of my time.
I gotta yield. Can I? No, it's unacceptable. Okay, I'm running out of time. Let me just go a little bit further here with this and say that this has a huge fiscal impact, all right, on the jobs that will be created. Everybody from up north knows very well, and I'm sure Councilor Burton knows this really well, that big companies, all the paper companies who are here, where are they making paper today? Beijing. Where are the jobs coming from here in New Hampshire? All right, they're coming from small business, and that's clear. It's been a clear trend for a while. This falls under a category called disincentive for investment. It is huge. All right, one real quick last point. Why would you invest in an LLC if you have to pay this extra 5% tax? One of the biggest problems, even President Obama has defined it, is capital. Capital for small businesses is in a huge crunch. Right now, today, would you invest in a small business knowing that if I put my money in a big business, AIG, I put so much in it already, why not a little more? Dividends that I get back from them at a federal rate will be taxed at 15% maximum. If I invest in an LLC here in New Hampshire, the dividends I got back from them, if you call them dividends now, which is what you want to do, are taxed already at the government at 35% maximum rate. Now they're at 40. Why would you invest in a small business? Why not just invest in China and make more money? I have more to say, but I've run out of time. I want to thank you all very much on behalf of the SBSIA for taking the time to come out to speak against this. Oh, and by the way, I would offer one thing to the department, who I love dearly, as I said. Bring it back in here. You now have a situation where the rules cannot be in effect before February, the earliest. I'll call it tomorrow if you want, but the tax period that we're talking about ended December 31st. Rules put into effect after January 1st, I doubt can be applied to the prior year. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not giving legal advice here. I want the department to really determine, go to the Attorney General's office, go to the court, go to whoever you have to go to, find out if these rules can retroactively be applied. I don't think this statute stands on its own. I don't think anybody could reasonably determine a tax based upon the language of the statute. So you may have a year, if it is so determined by the appropriate authorities, in which you can't enforce this tax. So why not have a hearing on it? Why not bring it to the legislature? Why not see what the intent is? Why not look at the fiscal impacts? I'm sorry for running over. I apologize. Thank you.